Well, I always love talking about the experience I've had podcasting because it's been such a positive part of my academic life over the last couple of years. But I also feel a complete fraud because I understand it very, very little. I've got probably very little to tell you people who do understand it. But I suppose there might be lots of equivalents like me in your institutions who are basically enthusiastic about disseminating material, and if you give them a framework and support in which to do it, they'll really jump at that. And I think that's what I've been really happy to do. So my job is I'm a lecturer in English here at Oxford. And there's something very specific about our context which got me into recording lectures in the first place, which is the first thing that I did. And that's that our lectures, this isn't the same in lots of other institutions, but our lectures are, broadly speaking, all optional for students. They supplement work that they do in colleges in smaller groups. So they choose whether to come or not. But also, they're scheduled at times which are convenient to lecturers and which don't necessarily map onto the timetable of students either, the sort of day-by-day timetable or the sort of week-by-week timetable. And in the past we have felt that because lecture attendance is voluntary, the material in lectures is a reward for having turned up to the lecture at a particular time in a particular place. And that seemed to me, for lots of reasons, a rather unsatisfactory model for teaching. And so I thought that it would be more useful to my own students, to the students within the university, if I recorded the lectures and then they could use them, they could download them at a time which was more, both just in calendar terms, in timetable terms, more convenient, but in intellectual terms, more convenient. So the audience I had in mind was internal first, very much. And I've been very surprised how much wider that audience has become. But the lectures themselves were delivered as undergraduate lectures. I recorded them with a 20-quid microphone attached to my iPod on the lectern. I haven't been interested in having visual kind of visuals. That seems, it's quite boring for an English lecture. You tend to use the blackboard. I've been nervous about the kinds of PowerPoint presentations and the images and the copyright of material that I might use in a lecture, and nervous about investigating all of those aspects. So I haven't done any of that. These have just been audio files. Seems to me pretty low tech. I have transferred the files from my iPod to my computer and then emailed them to the guys at OUCS who have put them up for me. So that's been the extent of my sort of technical involvement. And it's also been the extent of the changes I've made to what I would normally do in order to record the lectures. Okay, so I've done nothing different. I've only changed the lectures, I think, in one respect, and that's something I learned from my first series, that my normal lecturing style would be to talk through, in some ways, to talk through a printed handout and to refer to that handout to kind of help students who are listening orient themselves. Because I didn't want to present the handout for wide dissemination along with the audio file of the lecture, I've tended to withdraw from that style of lecturing a bit, because what happened when these lectures were more widely disseminated is that people emailed me all the time saying, can you refer to this handout? And like anything that somebody mentions and you can't see, you know, you don't have access to it. It seems as if it's really, really important. I mean, the handout itself was probably very disappointing when it arrived, but I think it did detract from the sort of self-contained nature of the lectures. That's the only thing I've changed. Lectures have lots of people coughing and, you know, sort of spluttering. And sometimes when it's really bad, I say, you know, I'm really sorry, it's kind of Oxford November, and we all laugh. But they're very much live in the classroom. I haven't made any change to that. The first set of lectures I did was on non-Shakespearean drama, so drama of the Elizabethan Jacobean period, which is less well known than Shakespeare. And that gave us a really good opportunity to present as e-books the texts of those plays. So I was talking about plays which are perhaps not so readily available, and I was talking about them to people who maybe haven't read them, and part of the point of the lectures was to say, you should read this because it's really interesting. And for our own internal students, quite easy for them to take that step, should they want to. But actually for people, despite the huge range of material that there is on the web, it is sometimes quite hard to get a reasonably readable version of a play which might not have been reprinted for 100 years or even 400 years. So the next thing we did was to prepare some e-books, free e-books of those texts, which could be downloaded with the lectures. We've also done that for the second series I did, which was on Shakespeare. And there we created e-books of a very particular text of Shakespeare, the First Folio text, which had a kind of cachet of its own. Although I personally think, I mean, it's a really interesting experiment. Presenting Shakespeare texts is less important in terms of disseminating knowledge than presenting these other texts, which were genuinely difficult to get hold of. So it's been a hugely positive experience for me, much more than I thought. Partly because our own students tend to be too cool to be too appreciative, whereas people from outside the institution are not that cool and write. I can't say they write every day, but I do get, you know, kind of trickle of emails of people saying, I'm in Krakow, or I'm in California, or, you know, I'm a dramaturg working in, I don't know, Michigan or something, and I really enjoyed hearing this, and that's a real boost. And also, it speaks to the thing I think I most believe as an academic is that our job is to disseminate. I mean, both the knowledge that we have, but much more the kind of methods and the enthusiasm and the kind of purpose of it, why we want to do it. And I think what excites me about Creative Commons and these kinds of frameworks is that it gives us something which I feel the academic community has failed to generate for itself, which is a kind of a system of dissemination which it can value, which doesn't involve the weirdly perverse relationships I think academics and publishers have. I mean, that seems to me a mad economic system. I can't understand why it continues, but it continues because it's the only way academics have with each other of valuing what they do. And I think if we can find an alternative to that, that will be really helpful. So it's been a great, personally for me, it's been very sort of validating and cheering to have these emails. But I think more importantly than that, institutionally, it's been important. There's been quite a lot of use of the Shakespeare lectures, particularly in schools. I had quite a lot of correspondence with school teachers and sometimes with school students about them. I did a sort of open seminar on Othello on Facebook, which was a result of people at school having listened to the lecture, and that was another fun thing to do. And particularly for Oxford, which is which has a real need to continue to build relationships with schools, and particularly the kind of schools that haven't sent us students in the past. I think that's not something I expected, I anticipated, but it's been a really important part of what's happened. And the other group who've mostly used them, I think, are sort of lifelong learner people who are former students of the university, and I think that's a kind of institutional feel good about the university as well. So I can't think, you know, there have been huge advantages for me in doing this, and I certainly would continue doing it. And I think what's important for me is to think about recording my lectures just as a completely routine activity, because I don't want to think of this as a particular project I'm doing for a certain amount of time and which requires, you know, a particular effort in a particular direction, but rather just a kind of routine part of preparing a lecture, going to the lecture room with my notes and my iPod and thinking this is just what I would do. As I said, there have been really very, very few disadvantages. I worry slightly. I have felt that as a still publicly funded university, we must be disseminating our research and what we do as widely as possible. It's not clear that we will be a publicly funded university within a relatively short time frame. And I'm interested that one of the ways that the value for money of tuition fees is being talked about in the press is the cost per lecture. That seems to be a sort of index of, you know, what is it you're paying for in these different places. It's possible, I think. I don't think here, at the moment here in Oxford, because we are over-provided with lectures in my subject. There are many more lectures than anybody, even the most diligent or sort of parsimonious student, could ever go to. So we've got so many lectures that I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think if lectures are freely available, though, and they are the thing that people are being encouraged to think they're paying for in their tuition fees, I think that is going to be a problem. It's also an opportunity in that we might have a complete kind of guerrilla university, which just picks. I mean, it'd be wonderful to run a kind of online course, first year undergraduate course, which just picks from all the Creative Commons, which makes a syllabus out of that stuff. I mean, I think that would be a really interesting challenge to the assumptions behind what's happening in university funding, but it's probably not going to happen. So that may be something on the horizon, that the free dissemination of university level material seems to me an absolute good at the moment. I'm not sure in a different economic framework it may necessarily seem to the first consumers of that good a thing that they want to encourage. I think that's all I wanted to say, so thanks very much.